This show brought to you by Circle of Seven Productions, www.cosproductions.com. Please be sure to subscribe and welcome to our circle.
Hello, everybody. It is February 8th, 2018, and my name is Patricia W. Fisher here for Readers Entertainment Radio. And today I have a really cool guest. He's an author. He's an author and an adventurer, and his name is Roy Baron. He goes by Roy Backpack Baron or Backpack Baron. He's an award-winning journalist and former executive who looked around and decided he wanted to make the world a better place. He earned the name Backpack when he hit the pause on his executive career consulting Fortune 100 firms and U.S. government agencies. Since then, he's traveled the world, spoken to the rich and famous, poor and homeless, and everyone in between. He's helped build homes, discussed national and world politics. He's interviewed fascinating people and visited incredible places. His memoir, Looking Glass Shattered, Cubicle Commando to Constitutional Conservative Leader, is a collection of 7 years of interviews and travel, and it came out at the beginning of this year. So welcome, Mr. Baron. How are you today?
Great. Thanks so much for having me on the show, and I really appreciate it. One of the things that, as we discussed as we were going into the show, is I'll be 50 in June, and how much has changed in America and the world. And I'm coining a new phrase that I think nobody's talked about. We have the millennials, but we also have face to screen. And I grew up in a time where we didn't have technology. We didn't have cell phones or smartphones. We just had basic rotary phones, a black and white TV. 1970s America was when I was a kid. I was born in 1968. And it's like, what have we lost, but what have we gained? Because I love technology. I did 20-plus years in the technology areas of project management to quality assurance, which is an area that, in particular, that when I've taken that and used that to the greater look at how can we have better communities, how can we improve, you know, I have a talk show also. It's on Blog Talk Radio and other outlets. It's Win-Win International. It's changed the name through many years. But, you know, take the time, and us as authors and talk show hosts and commentary, take a pause and see, you know, what have we lost, but what have we gained?
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting to see the difference. I find that a lot of times the idea that we can separate ourselves and this whole, you know, technology is better, but there really is nothing better than sitting down face-to-face with someone, talking to someone, just really, you know, seeing their expressions, seeing their body language, and seeing who they are. You really can't replace any of that with any sort of technology.
Oh, yeah, for sure. And one thing that I like to shine a bright light on is that a lot of times when we feel depressed or anxious or always on the go, and sometimes it's taking a look at the society. And oftentimes I think that we get stuck in the spider web and we think it's us, and, you know, anybody who can sit and try to write a book over a year period and force themselves to be face to screen to get that great book out, or however it is, a memoir or a novel or any type of work of art, creative project, you got to really be focused on these types of things. But I think that, you know, what I've seen is some ways maybe we can look at adopting more face to screen and face to face.
Right. It's interesting. I've noticed, I was talking to my daughter this morning, and she talked about even just like reading. And I'd seen it last year when I went to a conference that the millennials are actually buying a lot of books, like, you know, in your hand books, because they're getting eye fatigue from staring at their screen so much. And so it feel like it all goes full circle, but how do we, you know, foster that, you know, that continue of that, making sure that we, you know, close that gap, and it's not all about the screen and it's not all about the technology.
Yeah, one of the areas that I try to look at, because I'm really active on social media, people can find me under Daniel Roy Baron with one R. I've got about 40,000, and I love doing it. I really, because I've learned a lot from social media, even if it's a positive or negative comment, I'm always learning. But one of the things that came that was a huge event that I feel like that bringing this up on the show is about Sophia the robot became a citizen of Saudi Arabia. And so what I see is all the human beings are trying to be more like robots, and the robots are becoming more like human beings. But in my opinion, I feel like there should be protests in the street that why are robots now suddenly becoming citizens, and where is all this going with Deming was the father of quality assurance. He both invented artificial intelligence from his 1950 studies. And for those people who might not know about quality assurance, it's all about testing, but it's looking at the bigger picture. It's looking at systems, policies, procedures. And Deming was considered, he invented some things like Kaizen, like first in, first out, and a lot of efficiency and time studies. So he was responsible for creating a lot of the quality assurance and the artificial intelligence that goes into robots today. But looking at that from a bigger picture, there really isn't a lot of human being. And I used to work for UPS at one time in the industrial engineering. We did time studies. Well, how do we factor in the human being factor, and where is all this going? And I really believe that robots should never, ever be citizens.
Right. Wasn't that the argument in Bicentennial Man, is he started as a robot, and then he was slowly trying to become more human, and he was trying to become a human being. I'm assuming the argument would be there's no soul, there's no, you know, like you're saying, there's no human factor in that. And so where is the line drawn between technology and humanity?
Oh, yeah. One of the things, many projects that I've thought of or worked on, I actually walked into the Secretary of State office in Austin, Texas, and registered a compassion party, or looked at how do I register that. And it's a tremendous project, but it's also looking at needs. And one of the things that I like to talk about in my books and when it comes to compassion is fundamental needs, but healthy, positive versions of food, clothing, shelter, love, community, affection, and jobs with meaning that people love to do, and not service jobs that people, like more slave type jobs that people hate to go to work and hit the snooze alarm 10 times, but really, really good jobs. But these are fundamental. And the difference between surviving and thriving, but one of the areas is that robots, they never need to worry about fundamental needs. They never need to worry about all these things like food, clothing, shelter, love. You can turn them on, turn them off. They're like a tree, but a tree that doesn't even need anything. They don't have
right.
any need. So
right.
the one thing that really separates us from computers and technology, robots, is that we have needs. We have fundamental needs, and they don't have that.
Right. So tell me, you know, what was your catalyst to walk away from the executive career and then go into, you know, basically going out in the world and adventuring? And it's fascinating to see the things you've done. What was that catalyst that you said, what am I, you know, I need to do something else?
Well, it was April 1st, 2011, and previously, the month before that, in March, I actually jumped out of an airplane, and I think part of it was I had money saved up, and I was really going to start an LLC, and I registered it in Texas, and I just decided to get rid of all my stuff and become a minimalist with backpack, and that's how I got that nickname, one of my many nicknames, and started traveling on the Appalachian Trail. My friend Dan in Atlanta, he dropped me off. I lived in Atlanta for 16 years, and that's where I've mostly done my technology-type jobs. I just wanted a new career path. I was 42 at the time, so I'm looking at about 7 years now that I've been doing this, and I picked up some IT jobs along the way. I went back and did a quality assurance job in Colorado, and it was just this need where I wanted to live before I died, and my dad died in 2016, and so I was just propelled to... I don't want to be the regrets guy. I don't want to be in my 80s, and whether I'm in a nursing home or not, and saying, oh, why didn't I do this? Or, you know, I wanted to do something, so I hiked to the top of Mount Katahdin, and these are some of the highlights. And just doing circles around the country, and I hiked, like, the Great Sand Dunes in Colorado, and just some of the amazing parts of America that I've really gotten to see. And just to be on the trail with... my only concern is, like, what I'm hiking 5 to 10 miles a day and that sort of thing, you know, like, without having to have a conventional 9-to-5 type job. I just had a break in my life, and it has gone, I have to say, longer than I thought it would. There's some circumstances that came up that kind of point back to what happened in 1970s America, but when I got back, my dad had died, and there was a large amount of money 2016, but my family changed the will because I made some decisions. I haven't always made necessarily the correct decisions when it comes to studying, that it was out of love that they changed my dad's estate, that it was a lot of money and I could really get grounded. And I guess in some ways I've been rebelling against their decision. I've been living in hostels, and if I ran out of money, I would live in a homeless shelter. So
yeah,
there are some things that kind of caught me by surprise. And then I was dealing with my dad passing away. And the hardest part of that was my own mortality, because he's the first person that I was really, really close to. And just having to deal with that. And it took me a long time to get over it. I feel like now that it's been in almost 2 years, I feel a lot better. I mean, it's not as strong. And also having filled in the gap of doing a lot of adventures. And the name for adventure is taking unknown risks. Or taking risks with unknown outcomes is adventure.
Right. And you talked about that when we were before the show started, is how important it is to make sure that we all keep hold of that childlike want for adventure and to meet new people.
Oh, yeah, and that's huge. And I see that as an area with working with homeless, and because I've befriended some, and I've actually – we spent the day together. I actually slept in an elevator in Santa Monica, in a private elevator. I mean, obviously you're not supposed to do that, but what are your choices? I mean, it was things that I needed to learn. The only way I've been able to is spending time with some other homeless people. I'm currently in Mission Beach, and there was a guy who's been living under a bridge, and I spent some time with him going to some of the meals that they get here and just seeing what it's like and experiencing it, because I can read a book or I can watch a movie, but it's really, really experiencing it. So I had many, many reasons to become backpack in 2011, but so many of them were, you know, I'm cracking away at this keyboard and I'm looking up these beautiful posters of these people hiking mountains and swimming, whitewater rafting and all these adventures. And then I'm thinking, well, why can't I just be in the poster? You know, how it works.
Yeah.
They have a lot of inspirational posters. So that was a big part of it. But, you know, it's looking at, you know, making choices, accepting responsibility, but this childlike faith is what I see is a lot of the people living on our streets have given up on trust. And at some point in their life, especially when you're a baby, you're born into this. We're all born into this world with tremendous trust. And then something happens. So after so many disappointments, I totally understand why everybody can give up and just live on the streets. I can also totally understand why anybody would not want to live in a shelter, because I've lived in some where I'd rather take my risk living on the street than in a shelter, because there can be fighting, there can be lice in the bed, there can be I stayed at a really good one in Alamosa, Colorado, a very awesome, really great one called La Puente, and I shine a bright light on that. But I've stayed in other ones that there's a tremendous amount of improvement they can do, and we should, as a society and compassionate communities, we should look at doing everything we can to help bring in really good housing, like Holland and Netherlands, Finland, and some of the other countries that have 100% free housing, but really safe, clean housing. And we'll see a lot less people deciding to live on the streets, and a lot more care for people struggling with compassion, struggling with mental illness, and a lot of the ills that we have in our society that are preventing people from going into the thriving areas, Maslow, the hierarchy of needs. You know, that people are surviving, but they're not thriving. You know, how to go from that one level of just survival to thrive. And the how I would define it is, people who can create jobs with meaning that people love to do would be a thriving type thing. And just trying to figure out, where am I going to sleep, where am I going to eat, you know, what, just to get through the day is survival. If we can create more people in this planet, and we have so much opportunity to feed and help with a lot of people, and some of the other programs I'm looking with Africa and things that have been held down for so long, these are all themes of the book, but how do we get past the old wounds? How do we heal? And so the workshop is called Healed, Looking Glass Shattered. It's about PTSD, post-traumatic stress disorder. This is a lot of information, but it's a lot of these themes that have been going through my head. And my career direction, I'd like to do public speaking, travel, and talk about inspiration, motivation. This is it. And how do we do an autopsy on America and what changed and how do we improve? So I'm trying to do all this to make some career changes. And doing these videos and interviews that I've done this is an area that I'm hoping that will be my future.
Right. So tell me, when you've traveled and you've seen different things, what has been the most surprising thing you've seen good that you've seen people do, and then for those who are homeless or for those that are in need, and then, of course, what are some of the things that you've seen that have just kind of taken you by surprise, of, say, the cruelty or the inability to understand it?
Well, this is a huge area, and this can cross a lot of sections in society. Is that if I were to start one nonprofit right now, what it would be is take somebody who's only lived in their small town, do a documentary of like a before picture where they're only within about 10 people, because there's 7 million people out there. So if someone spends their whole entire life with maybe a set of around 10 friends and family, they're going to have a picture of all humanity, much different than what reality is. That's the fantasy version. So things that we're struggling with now that we've just heard about in Charlottesville, like racism and a lot of the things where when a person opens up, and they, especially with hostel living, I have 15 people. I'm sleeping in a room now. I'm in a beach bungalow in San Diego, and it's what I can afford. I'm kind of stretching my dollars. I get about $270 a week from my dad's estate, 10 years instead of like a lump sum. It was originally supposed to be. My dad had Alzheimer's, but what I've learned is there's a tremendous amount more compassion out there, and it's taking risks to just get off the couch. You know, because we all have a choice every day. We can just lay in bed with a shawl wrapped around our heads, and we don't have to get out of bed. We can just stay there. I mean, that's
right,
a choice.
Right.
A lot of us with struggling with depression, anxiety. And so travel itself is a great way to deal with depression, anxiety, and also nonstop travel. So my program would be is get someone who's only lived in their small town, and maybe they do have some racism inclinations, but it's so understandable, and just do a documentary before, and take people from all different backgrounds, African-Americans, Asian people from who are Americans who just are in this rut, and do a six, let them travel anywhere in the world and stay in hostels for 6 months. And suddenly you see, I have neighbors who are from Africa, they're from Africa, they're from Asia, from all over, that are in the same room. And that's the real United Nations. And I'd like to even see the United Nations have everybody living in a hostel-type setting where you have Israelis and Palestinians living together. Because then you start seeing that we're all human. We all have the same, getting back to fundamental needs, we all have those needs that we need. And then we start seeing we all have the same needs. So I think by opening myself up, now I've had thousands of conversations. I've done many different types of talk shows. I was actually on a conservative talk show, and I keep changing the subtitle of my book because I'm self-published with CreateSpace. But the main title you can't change, Looking Glass Shattered, but I changed it to User's Guide to Being Human or something like that, because I kept changing it. It was Constitutional Conservative, and then I changed it to De Oppresso Leader, which is Freedom of the Oppressed. And as I've gone through changes, I keep changing the subtitle of the book. But I originally wrote the book in 2010. It was called Healed. And I keep taking it off because it is self-published, and you keep rewriting it. And one of the unique things about this book is I think I might actually even, the memoir part, I think the workshop is pretty much done, but keep rewriting it and even pass it on to one of my kids to rewrite and use their, you know, just the idea of having one book that's constantly being rewritten as things change. And it's an interesting idea anyway.
Yeah. And I think it's important to show, I mean, what you've seen and how things change and your perception. Was it right? Was it almost right? Was it completely off? I mean, I think it's important for people not to get so comfortable in just thinking one thing. So tell me something about, or tell me about the Win-Win International.
Well, the idea of that is we already have some things somewhat like where this is going is called fair trade, where look at fair labor practices. So if somebody's working in a third world country like Africa or Asia or some other country, how do we make sure that they get livable wages? So, and right now in Mexico, for example, $3 an hour is livable or somewhat livable, but right now they only get $4.75 a day. You know, that's per day.
Uh-huh.
And in America, a livable wage is $15 an hour. And in Southern United States, minimum wage is $7.25. Here in California, it's about $11.50. So how do we, you know, verify that? And so it would be a stamp on product that would be shipped, and it would say the win-win label. It would be a new label. But the talk shows would come hand-in-hand. So I guess what makes this unique is combining a talk show with a labeling process and making sure that the customers, the employees, the product, and it's also a quality assurance guide using ethics and morality. Is that product, service, or company, and government, I would extend it even to governments and communities, are we ethically and morally, it's going to have a lot of like litmus tests of quality assurance type tests. You know, did people get a good wage? Was the product, is everybody winning from all sides? And it seems like we live in this either win-lose society or lose-lose society. How does everybody win? And I believe we can do that. There's a way to do it. And, you know, there's always reality too. That, you know, how do we take these ideas, and it's not a fantasy that everybody can win. And so we have companies like REI that offer 100% money back policies. They have an incredible policy at some of these stores. All these
right.
types of things are winning. You know, how does the customer also walk away and feel like they're winning? You know, it's also encouraging mom and pop type stores from the 1970s that we had a lot more of, and we've lost some things from these corporations. You know, we've seen Walmart and some of the Starbucks where the middle person gets squeezed so much that they can go bankrupt or they can lose their shirts because it's so much more about greed and corruption. And these are some of the themes of what I write about and talk about. Is, you know, what have we lost from this efficiency and this corporation and from having these local butchers in the local stores? So these are all the types of things. It's taking fair trade, but to another level beyond fair trade that
right.
we already have.
Right. So you also talk about a lot of this on your radio show. Where can we find your radio show?
Well, the radio show, Win-Win International, it's on YouTube with an S on the end. It's on Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker, TuneIn. And I would say I did do Voices of Global Freedom before that, and it was a conservative show, which is very interesting. I interviewed Sheriff Joe Arpaio, Lieutenant General Flynn, more of the conservative audience. But I grew up in 1970s America where we didn't think conservative, Republican, progressive, liberal. We just thought American, and I can go through the whole spectrum of why we've changed so much. What have we lost? We thought we voted for the best candidates, and you know, I've been pretty political. I actually ran for president as a write-in, and I try to help. How do we look at more write-in possibilities where it's not necessarily a flag, but we look at the person as a human being running for office? And I've even considered there's still time I could run against Ted Cruz for U.S. Senate in Texas as a write-in, and just to see where that can go.
Right.
It's still possible until July. I called Secretary of State and Texas, just as more of a placeholder to say, well, what are these options? And, you know, why these are tough issues. I think all these issues that I think about are all related to jobs. So if someone is from a social services background, they're going to be more into helping immigration and refugees. And someone from the law enforcement, military, CIA, which is when I worked with Yoda, when I did Voice for the Global Freedom, they're going to be more into how do we help, you know, put people in prison? How do we get the bad guys? And then
mm-hmm.
so these are two heating areas, but they're the undercurrent of all these people who are, whether it's with the resist movement or it's the Trump movement or whatever flag that they're flying, a lot of times it feels like the Dr. Seuss book. You know, people are protesting or resisting on either side. But at the end of the day, a lot of this is all about jobs. You know, people are more likely to be law enforcement, military, intel, be for the Trump-type flag, and then the people in the social services area are going to be more for the liberal flag, helping everybody. And so those are perspectives that I'd like to shine a light on to see that people can start broader discussions on what's really going on.
Right. So you said you have you're 50 in June?
Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
Any big plans for that?
Oh, wow. I haven't really thought about it. I think because I'm doing some more adventures and meeting people and new ways to it's possible. We're actually working on this project that might come into fruition. I'm working with King Dang, the original Lost Boys of Sudan. I've been working with him since 2014. It's a beautiful relationship. And I learned that I'm a product of about five tribes, but I'm originally from Africa. Because I can prove it.
Oh, wow.
The tattoo on my hand matches his 100%. He's from South Sudan. And I have dark spots, even though I look white as rice, I have dark spots on my body. And so my nose is Khazar, and, like, I'm from Irish. I look Irish, too. But when I look at myself as a humanitarian and a blend of five different tribes, he's got some... he was accused of a crime he didn't commit, and I hired a lawyer back in 2014 to help his situation, and that's finally getting resolved, and we're looking at hopefully going on an airplane to Africa and bringing him home. And if people don't know, the story of the Lost Boys of Sudan is an incredible survival story. The northern Sudan, the Muslims came down for the natural resources there, the oil in South Sudan, and they attacked a peaceful village, and there's been several movies and documentaries. There was a The Good Lie came out recently with Reese Witherspoon.
Right.
We've been
right.
working on some projects. Actually, people can look up. There was a lawsuit, and I was actually helped with that. I helped someone financially with that in 2014 against the movie where they took the story and without getting proper approval. And so the Lost Boys got about $5,000 from the lawsuit. So there's a lot of projects like that. We're looking to go back to Africa, but to bring him home. And he's related to a tribal king, so that's why the name D-A-N-G, Dang, is actually a tribal name from South Sudan, a very important name. He's related to one of the main three people who was killed in 1956 in one of the other fighting with the Muslims. And so this has been a long story. We're talking about going back and helping build some well and some other. So that would be really my 50th birthday. That would be amazing to go in the forest there and go to Wulu, which is in South Sudan. It's an area where people are still living some of the tribal ways, but it's also, there's been tremendous suffering there. A lot of starvation. There's about 5 million people struggling. And so there's a lot of need. So it's an incredible opportunity. Yeah, so hopefully that'll be what will be the 50th celebration.
So you've written this memoir. Will you be continuing to write the memoirs, like putting things together in a book, along with the blogging?
Well, the biggest thing I'd like to work on right now is a screenplay, and I can do some of it, but it's also character development, you know, and the time. But the screenplay would involve me and McCore's stories of struggling the words of freedom, and in a way I look at the Muslim invasion as just another corporation, and you know, and what have we lost from this corporate world now where everything is about dollars and cents? So the timeline would be showing me in the 1970s America and showing a different version of America and showing him in Africa and his struggles, and it would go back and forth. So it would be similar to the movie Crash. So I've already got the screenplay in my mind. That would be one area that I'd like to do. But as far as writing, I'm still doing tons of posts inspired by people that I meet or some little thing, and I'll put it on Twitter or I'll put it on Facebook or LinkedIn or Instagram or some picture or something. So I'm constantly writing, but as far as new books, I would like to write another one, especially after some experiences and more international travel. And that would be a direction that I would love to do. I love to write, so I don't want to – and I love to read, so I wouldn't want to necessarily that's still going to be a part of me in the future.
Absolutely. Well, if anybody is interested in seeing Roy's information, you can find him on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, LinkedIn, and Goodreads. He's under Daniel Roy Baron, B-A-R-O-N, also Backpack Baron. And, you know, tune in also to his radio show and look up for Win International. He's also got videos on YouTube, so you can find him pretty much anywhere. Thank you so much for being on the show today. Really appreciate your time.
Well, thank you so much.
Okay, and you guys keep reading, and happy Thursday.
This show brought to you by Circle of Seven Productions. www.cosproductions.com. Please be sure to subscribe and welcome to our circle.